Welcome to the Mindful Medicina Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show. In today's episode, we explore the history of how allopathic medicine, or what some people refer to as Western medicine, came to fruition. This is a part of history that everyone should know about, but most do not. Any information that would otherwise empower humanity is usually suppressed or debunked as conspiracy after all, right? You'd be surprised to learn that what we call alternative medicine was the only medicine until approximately 100 years ago. Before Big Pharma, which we started calling Big Harma, healing leaned into the laws of nature. Humans were able to perpetuate in the absence of synthetic drugs from the beginning of time. Now, with great advances in technology, we have been able to intervene in emergencies with great success. And with lab-derived drugs, we can soften the blow of symptoms, which I think we can be enamored with in emergency situations. Though Janelle and I appreciate the advancements in science and technology, we wondered, why does allopathy want you to have amnesia to the powers of healing that are inherently gifted to us through nature? Isn't it always curious that self-healing is such a threat to the medical establishment? Wait, what establishment? In this episode, we want to expose the men behind the establishment who created what will become known as the medical industrial complex. Can you guess who created the medical industry as we know it today? I'll give you a hint. I call it banker's medicine. It can feel daunting to accept the level of corruption and collusion that churns at the core of the medical industrial complex as we know it today. How is it that Big Pharma has leveraged their way into a mob-like position of power, indoctrinating the masses through the medical schools and media, punishing anyone who would disrupt their profit margin? And all of this with a wink and a nod from captured regulatory agencies and high government officials. Why are decentralized, safe, effective, and long-practiced ancestral healing modalities such as energy medicine, including homeopathy, naturopathy, herbology, and chiropractor care, still widely delegitimized as not being real medicine? Why does so-called real medicine often kill rather than cure, or keep one perpetually sick and addicted to expensive prescription drugs for a lifetime?
How did we get here? When folks hear the story of how our modern medical system came to be, it's rare for jaws not to drop. I was once even accused of presenting a fantastical conspiracy theory when I gave an account of these events. It goes to show how thickly wrapped in obscuring propaganda this account has become within our near-past cultural memory. One has only to crack a couple of history books or do a 3-minute internet search to find that this is indeed a tale of deep conspiracy. More precisely, a historically documented conspiracy fact. This is the story of Rockefeller Medicine and the Flexner Report. Let's start from the beginning.
Chapter 1, Who's Your Daddy? You've heard the term peddling snake oil, yes? Well, the origin is attributed to the central character from which the rest of this account unfolds. This was Dr. Bill Livingston, celebrated cancer specialist, in quotes. Except that wasn't his real name, and he wasn't a real doctor. Or, let's put it this way, he had the same medical degree as Bill Gates. His real name was William Avery Rockefeller, a grade A shyster in just about every way imaginable. In the early years of the 19th century, William Rockefeller, aka Dr. Livingston, went from one small rural town to another selling his rock oil tonic, a useless at best, toxic at worst, mixture of petroleum and laxatives, which he convinced the poor folks he conned into buying it that this would cure their cancer. He couldn't stay in one place too long, as he had to live on the run from the enraged victims of his ruse, engaging in ever more outrageous tactics to sling his bogus wares. Abandoning his first wife and six children to start a bigamous marriage in Canada, while at that same time fathering two more children by a third woman, he adopted the alias Livingston after being indicted for raping a girl in Cayuga in 1849. Though he was a deadbeat dad and seldom present, disappearing for years at a time, when he was with his children, he would teach them the tricks of the trade. He was known to brag about his parenting technique. Quote, "I trick my boys every chance I get. I want them sharp." Devil Bill, the notorious nickname given to William Avery Rockefeller, was also none other than the father of John D. Rockefeller, who would go on to found the Standard Oil monopoly and eventually change the face of medicine using many of the parlor tricks he learned from his dear old dad.
Chapter 2, Split and Spin. Friends, the rise of the oil industry is a fascinating historical rabbit hole ride, loaded with the same manner of deception and treachery as previously described. In his approach to this business venture, the Rockefeller apple didn't fall far from the tree. We'll put some links in the show notes so you may explore further on your own. The term medical industrial complex is about as accurate a name as can be. What we know as modern medicine arose from a calculated survival tactic of Rockefeller's fractured oil monopoly. Due to predatory corruption and international conflict, Standard Oil had instigated the economic infiltration of the petrodollar and had become a monopoly to a degree of which the media called an octopus strangling the world. In 1911, the U.S. Supreme Court declared Standard Oil an illegal monopoly, and it was broken up into dozens of subsidiaries, many of which became the big names we know today. Needless to say, Rockefeller's reputation was now as trashed as that of his father's, but on a global scale. What to do? This would require a major PR facelift. Earlier in the story, we mentioned a more current disreputable monopolist who found himself in a similar pickle. Here's a hint. When life gives you lemons, become a philanthropist. Hey, you have the money. You can virtue signal and hold purse strings that shape the destiny of your pandering recipients. Yes, you guessed it. Much like the modern example of Bill Gates, John D. Rockefeller immediately began his philanthropic campaign to recapture the trust and admiration of the populace. In fact, he is widely known as the inventor of the public relations industry itself, amassing experts in media and psychology to craft his new image. He is famously known for the camera crew whom he hired to follow him around much of the time, filming him handing out dimes to poor folks in public. As cheesy as it sounds, that shit worked. Soon, larger and larger donations to public institutions would serve to bend them to his will.
Chapter 3, Two Heads Are Darker Than One. Rockefeller had already begun to infiltrate education and other sectors, recognizing the source of fundamental indoctrination that schools presented. It wasn't long before fellow economic titans noticed the influence, power, and ultimately profit that this new philanthropic model could steer one towards when directed into education. Andrew Carnegie was a steel magnate who had made his fortune in tandem with Rockefeller on the railroads, transporting his oil all over the country. He approached the Rockefeller Foundation and proposed a joining of forces to transform the educational landscape of our nation in the image they saw fit. This, friends, is another rabbit hole to explore. The Rockefeller Foundation and Carnegie Endowment, which would soon become the Carnegie Institute, sought to change the way American history, as well as other subjects, were taught in schools. Their plan succeeded. We've put more links in the show notes for you to explore more about that. But, moving on, Standard Oil had been using its petroleum byproducts to produce insect repellent. Under one of its subsidiaries, it used these same byproducts to produce a product called Nujol, which was a laxative. At the time, a 6-ounce bottle of Nujol cost 28 cents, yet it's cost 1/5 of a cent to produce. Eureka! What if we could produce all kinds of pharmaceuticals from these petroleum byproducts? This was a wildly profitable new venture they were chomping at the bit to launch large scale. Trouble was, most of the world at the turn of the century were still using naturopathic, herbal, and homeopathic, and energy medicine. This would be a very tough sell, but they figured, if you can't beat them, buy them.
Chapter 4, The Medical Marionette. In 1901, Rockefeller established the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, which was partnered with and funded also by Carnegie Institute resources. The Carnegie Institute recruited Simon Flexner, who they appointed as the director. His brother, Abraham Flexner, an educator, was commissioned to write a report on the state of the American medical system. This would become the infamous Flexner Report of 1910. The purpose was to visit and investigate all the nation's medical schools in order to evaluate them according to exacting standards that would increase the rigor of criteria for admission and graduation. For this, they were widely lauded and praised. Sounds good, right? Improving the efficiency and quality of our entire medical system? Of course, they use criteria curated to their own profit agenda to judge the relevancy of all medical programs. They even reframe the definition of what would qualify as real and safe science. Sound familiar? Programs which were teaching natural modalities or had conflict with their scientific view were therefore deemed to fail at meeting these standards, and therefore defunded and closed. Consider the social environment of the early 19th century. Racism and sexism were baked into the cultural cake. Besides the issue of seeking to eliminate schools teaching natural medicine, the Flexner Report had the notoriously controversial result of all but 2 African American schools being permanently closed nationwide, and only 1 school specifically attended by women to remain open. This aspect of the story is well remembered and still widely discussed.
Now that their sweeping scrutiny had exacted a crippling blow to many institutions, the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research swept in like wolves in sheep's clothing. Tremendous amounts of money were promised to the schools who agreed to cooperate with them. There was one condition: to ensure these generous donations were being spent wisely. Rockefeller and Carnegie Institute representatives were installed on the board of directors. Classic page from the playbook, Problem, Reaction, Solution. Here is the point where many devoted fans of allopathic medicine believe that this process helped to, quote unquote, modernize medicine and clean it up and get rid of the outdated modalities as they saw them, namely herbology, homeopathy, chiropractic care, Eastern modalities, and what we generally would know as naturopathic medicine. Nutrition was also no longer taught in medical schools. Any decentralized, unpatentable, uncontrollable forms of healing were considered to be in direct competition to drug-based allopathic interventions, which required expensive medical procedures like surgery and long hospital stays. At the time, natural medicine was known as empirical medicine and focused on stimulating the patient's own immune system, empowering the body's own healing capacity, using medicine provided by the natural world and tending to lifestyle and nutritional aspects. With this new allopathic model, healing the patient was no longer the goal, but rather to create lifelong customers who must rely on their drugs and aggressive interventions. The medical industrial complex was born.
With the help of the already booming PR industry that Rockefeller himself had helped create, specific propaganda was crafted to label any competition to the drug-based allopathic medical paradigm to be quacks. And this was dutifully spread by the media, thought leaders of the day, and captured educational institutions. The influx of all this money allowed for new buildings to be constructed, the purchase of expensive equipment, the installation of elaborate laboratories, and to hire, quote, top-notch teachers. This was very impressive to the public, who soon became seduced by these grandiose displays of wealth that surely seemed to signal progress. And yet, it was all geared towards feeding the rising pharmaceutical industry that would prey upon those it purported to heal. On a twisted note of humor in this story, one of the most stunning, yet perhaps unsurprising details is that Rockefeller was known to continue using homeopathy, herbal medicine, and chiropractic care as medical modalities for he and his own family, as did the Carnegies. This story keeps unfolding. As we see today that pharmaceutical companies offer medical schools millions of dollars as a means to buy influence on curriculum and deepen the indoctrination. True to the Rockefeller legacy, the snake oil still flows, and a new hydra of cutthroat monopoly has emerged, now with a cult-like following, the masses hypnotized by its psychotic propaganda.
We know the power of sovereign, decentralized medicine. It is free, and it is all around us and within us. We can educate ourselves to possess the ancestral knowledge that holistically liberates and unites our minds, bodies, and spirits. We can break the spell and unplug from the medical matrix. The powers that shouldn't be want you to abandon critical thinking and forget history. Mindful Medicina is here to remind you.
We love you. We see you. We got this.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.